Let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Get the local view, a variety of topics to discuss. You can catch his work in the sports section of the Register Guard online, registerguard.com, ducksports.com. The handle on Twitter is at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how are things with you?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing okay. How are you?
All right. I'm not the biggest college baseball guy. I know OSU was really good, the defending champs. They made a coaching change. I thought, still not pleased with the answers we got surrounding Luke Heimlich. But that said, the new coach is Pat Bailey. They're number 16 in the country. So you're up there, I assume, to cover the regional.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to try to hit at least one day of the regional. I was actually up there this afternoon talking to the Beavers, talking to Pat Bailey. I think the feeling there is, with all the change that they've had, you know, between Pat Casey stepping down, the players they lost to the draft, the injuries they've had this season, they're not as good as they've been, but I think they feel pretty good about the fact that for a third straight year they're going to host a regional in Corvallis.
Yeah, I've done a little reading up. I mean, what stands out? The guys you talk to, what do they like about this edition of OSU baseball?
Well, I guess you got to start with Adley Rutschman, who is probably the best player in the country and could be the number one pick in the draft. A catcher who's got a set of tools that I think will make him a star in the major league. I think this is a guy who, if you're not a big college baseball fan, if you're more of a Major League Baseball fan, remember the name, because he's going to be playing for a long time in the majors. Now, he's really the one guy, in terms of their lineup, who is back from last year. The rest of their team is very new. And their pitching staff, you know, Kevin Abel was supposed to be their ace. He was, in some ways, the star of their College World Series last year. He's out with Tommy John, and they've really had to mix and match with their rotation. But I think they feel like their rotation is as healthy as it's been in a while. And so hopefully that gives them the arms to make it through a regional, because pitching depth is so important this time of year.
Back on the home front, of course, Saturday, the Ducks were set to host the season finale against UCLA. You wrote about it. They had the pregame ceremonies. They handed in lineup cards. The manager shook hands. And then the game got canceled because of the weather. Would I be off base saying, man, if that wasn't a microcosm of this season, of whatever can go wrong, does go wrong, come straight into play?
Yeah, it kind of felt that way. I mean, there was some anticipation at the ballpark that day, because we all thought, well, this could be George Horton's last game as the Oregon coach. And then you come to find out, oh, actually, that was last night. I may have been watching the end of the George Horton era without even knowing it. It felt wrong on one level, because George has had such a distinguished career in college baseball, going back to the Cal State Fullerton days. You knew that everyone at Oregon wanted him to go out on a high note, and at some point it became apparent that that wasn't going to happen, that they were not going to have the magical run to Omaha that they had been hoping for since they brought the program back. So it was just kind of a question of how it was going to end. But I don't think anybody wanted it to end that way, with a rainout.
No. Regardless of how you feel about X's and O's, I know you dealt with him. We had him on the show many, many times over the years. He was an easy guy to root for. And I don't know, this is 5 minutes old. George Horton has put out on Twitter, after discussing with family in the athletic department, we have come to a mutual decision for him to move on. So Rob Mosley just tweeted this out like 4 minutes ago. So the questions I was going to ask you about the future have been answered. But logically, is there any reason to be surprised by this?
Well, no. I had a feeling that's how it was going to turn out. Thought it was probably going to come today. So not a surprise. It's been going that way for a while, and I think the question is now in terms of the future. You know, one question has been answered in terms of George Horton, but now I think the question has to be, what does Oregon do to get that baseball program back to the level that they want to be at? How do they get some excitement around Oregon baseball? Because, you know, unfortunately, the feeling around that team for the last couple of years is just, there hasn't really been any energy. There's been no sense among the fan base that there was a lot of excitement about the team. So that's what Oregon's got to figure out now, is who can you hire for that job, who's going to come in and get the fans back on board and give them something to be excited about.
Yeah, you know, over the many years doing this, I remember probably 12 years ago when our show was rebroadcast up in Albany Corvallis, and they were disappointed with the basketball team, and people stopped showing up. And would it be accurate to say an angry fan base is one you can deal with? One that kind of stops caring that much is when you really run into a problem.
Yeah, I've always said that apathy is the worst thing that can happen for a fan base. And apathy is the stage that comes after the disappointment. And the reason apathy sets in is because fans don't feel like, for whatever reason, that the team is committed or capable of winning. And I think that's kind of where we got with Oregon baseball, where fans kind of felt like Oregon was content just to have a baseball team and just to have PK Park. And, you know, it was full one weekend of the year, and that's when the Beavers come. And the rest of the time, it was just kind of there. And so I think the thing that will get Oregon fans back on board with baseball is for Oregon to make a strong statement here that they want to contend. You know, they want to be at the level that Oregon State is at. They want to be a team that is in the mix to host regionals and super regionals and go to Omaha. And you know, Oregon briefly had that with George Horton, and it seemed like they were on track. And something just went off course, and they never did get it back. And now I think they just need to reset and reevaluate and try to find a new direction.
Talking with Austin Mika, the Register Guard. As a rule, when we talk recruiting, it seems like it's about football. And in recent years, you know, with the men's basketball team, they've got the one and dones. But now the women, off this Final Four run, I know for 2020 they're recruiting off the charts, but the recent announcement adding a tremendous player, a Minyan Moore of USC, I mean, how big a score is this, and how does she fit into the lineup? I know you guys talked with Coach Graves.
Yeah, well, when we had Kelly Graves in the studio for our podcast last week, we were talking about how the pieces fit together with this team. And at that was before it had become public that Minyan Moore had committed. And, you know, I think Kelly felt like they had, you know, they had a great team coming back, a team that was capable of winning it all. And it was just a matter of, you know, are there a couple pieces that they could fill in to give them a total complete team that really can do everything? And one of the things that they were looking for was maybe a little bit of toughness and somebody who could handle the ball and help them carry on some of what they had from Maite Cazorla. And so I think Minyan Moore does those things. You know, she's a physical player, a guard who was one of the leading rebounders for USC, a player who, you know, is experienced, has played at a high level in the Pac-12. So I realize that's kind of the last piece now that really completes this team. They're going to be a lot of fun to watch. You know about the players they have coming back, and I think with the players they're adding in, they're going to have some depth and some versatility even that they didn't have last year.
Yeah, fans are going to be counting down those days. You mentioned the – actually, I mentioned that we both mentioned the Duck Pod, and you had Coach Graves on. You know, he talked about the unprecedented success, making a Final Four. And like I said, we've seen the recruits for 2020. What did he have to say about maybe the impact of being so front and center, Elite Eight, Final Four, and now suddenly it seems like elite talent is just drawn here?
Yeah, well, it certainly doesn't hurt. when you're a coach building the program, if you're playing it deep into the NCAA tournament every single year, recruits certainly notice that. I mean, in some ways, it makes it even more remarkable to think about when they were putting together this current core of players. They didn't have any of that stuff. You know, they didn't have Final Four or the Elite Eight when Sabrina Ionescu committed to Oregon. At that time, it was all just a vision. But now they have something that they can point to for this next group to say, hey, here's what we can do. We've been there, and now we're just trying to get back there. And it does, it speaks to, I think, what Sabrina said when she announced that she was coming back for her senior year, that this program has never just been about a run, about trying to get to a Final Four. It's been about becoming one of those programs that's there year in and year out, and I think they've taken a big step toward that.
Couple final thoughts for Austin Meek on the Register Guard. So on Friday, as we were preparing for the weekend, word came down that Mount Vernon School, east of Fort Worth, was hiring disgraced ex-Baylor coach Art Briles. We know what he presided over in Waco. It looks like they tried to sneak it in on a Friday as a long weekend began. So you hear this news. What's your reaction to something like this?
Well, it's just sad because, to my knowledge, Art Briles has never taken any responsibility or expressed any remorse for what happened at Baylor. And people always ask, when is Art Briles going to be allowed to coach again? My answer to that was always, well, when is Art Briles going to own up to what happened on his watch at Baylor, which I don't believe that he has done. And so for a school to hire him and seem to have given no real consideration to the people who were hurt by what happened at Baylor. We're hearing things now about the quote-unquote vetting process that Art Briles went through, which apparently involved talking to pretty much no one who would have been hurt or impacted by what happened at Baylor. It makes the whole thing look like a sham. And you can say, at least he's only coaching at the high school level. At least it wasn't a college or a university that hired him. But, in a way, to me, that's almost worse, because the people who are going to be the next generation of men that need to change the entire conversation around some of these issues, they're in high school right now. And if they don't learn how to be respectful toward women in high school, they're probably not going to learn it in college. So it's disappointing to me on a whole lot of levels.
Yeah, I feel like I was debating. I was like, we could do a whole show about this, but we don't want to do that right now. But you got to see the Warriors front and center against the Blazers in the West Finals. I don't recall us discussing you updating your passport to go cover Toronto, but that's what it comes down to. They've got a heck of a team. You have any lean on who might win this, or you have a rooting interest? Because suddenly I think it might actually be an intriguing final.
Well, no, I don't think that I'm going to be going to Toronto to write that Chris Boucher column.
Darn it.
I get to do the Jordan Bell story. He was in Portland. I think my perception of this Warriors team changed a little bit over the course of that Blazers series. Because going into it, I kind of thought, this Warriors team may be a little more vulnerable than some we've seen in the past. And then, of course, they go out and they sweep the Blazers without Kevin Durant. It's kind of like, well, maybe I need to rethink that. I guess I'm kind of feeling Warriors in five, Steve. I just, after seeing them up close, you know, all the things that I was thinking about, you know, maybe this is the year that somebody could knock them off, didn't really look that way in the Western Conference Finals. And I know that the Blazers were tired. I don't think the Warriors got Portland's best shot. And I do think the Raptors can do some things that maybe Portland couldn't do in that series. But, you know, it just seems like the Warriors are still the Warriors. And as long as they've got Draymond Green and Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, whether Durant plays in the series or not, I don't really think anybody can beat them.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're going to build this up for the next 48 hours. Then Golden State's going to beat them in game one, take home court edge, and everybody's going to be like, well, so much for that. All right, well, you travel safe to and fro as far as Corvallis. Enjoy the regional, and always appreciate your time and insight, and I look forward to talking again next week.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.